Father, thanks. Can the people in the pub hear me on Zoom?
Yes, we can.
Cool. Thanks a million. Again, just want to say the usual thanks. Thanks for making this happen. Just to echo what Massimo was saying earlier, it's amazing to be able to tune in from not as far away as the United States. I'm only over the Alps in Austria, but I can almost smell the Beamish from here. It's a bit torturous, actually, to be quite frank. There's two cameras looking at you, and one of them is looking down at the tables with pints of the black stuff. The closest I can get to it is something called hell. I love the German word for blonde beer is called hell. So I have a special hell tonight. I know Ruth is eating a bag of Doritos, and I'm fucking starving here looking at her. Just yeah, sorry, just fine. Just don't turn the mic on because then I can hear the Doritos and it's oh my God. I came straight from work. But so it's great to be here. It was really nice to hear Dean read because I've actually been reading quite a lot of his poems. I'll see your pig poems and I'll raise you one. I used to live in Los Angeles and I moved here about six moved to Vienna from Los Angeles about 6 years ago. So it's been quite a while since I was in Cork, the Long Valley. But while I was living in Los Angeles, I wrote most of the poems in the first book, Stopgap Grace. So I was living in an area of Los Angeles where there were quite a lot of hipsters and great inspiration. So I'll start with a poem for Dean, called How to Kill a Pig. I expected them to tell me that my bacon had come from a happy pig, one that had had a full life, was corn-fed, had free range, did yoga in the mornings, played the cello, spoke Latin and learned to salsa dance while visiting relatives in Cuba. I thought maybe there would have been a photo album to accompany the sacrifice, documenting its first birthday, first snow, first of everything else, here an oink, there an oink. In far corners, I dubbed the mouths of others, their new voices out battling the clattering gunnery of plates, slamming down organic everythings. I gifted one woman berating her phone, the French language, to make her all the more endurable. Sweet as raw cane sugar to my fair trade coffee, I had the young couple across from me, nattering fondly from their deathbeds, their soon-to-be-left world better off now than it was when they were younger. The child in the high chair wanted in on the action, breaking into l'enfant et le sortilège when faced with a spoon load of non-GMO beige matter. I used a sortilège of my own in stripping the walls clean and emblazoning the newspaper headlines all over them, just to see if anyone would notice, remark, or question that one glaring absence as truth was led out the back, strung up by its hind legs, throat slit and left to hang there until the last drop of blood spattered into the bucket. So that's a pig poem. Sorry about this is weird. Everyone's on mute, but hopefully you can hear me. The last I did an online poetry reading in California. I was on Zoom. So I got up at like 4 o'clock in the morning because it was about 7 o'clock in Los Angeles. And there was the open mic first, then they introduced me and turned everybody else's camera off. All I could see was me talking to myself in the middle of the screen at 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know if anyone was there. It was weird and wonderful. Anyway, I'll give you one more pig poem. It's also for Dean. This is the last California poem, I promise. If anyone here is from California, I'm not bashing on you. Sorry, Catherine. This is a very original title of a poem. I just called it Bacon, because it's about bacon. One of my best friends lives in Hungary. He lives in a village in Hungary called Salona, and if anyone speaks Hungarian, Salona translates to bacon. My best friend, this American guy, he's really, really Jewish, and he bought a house in a village called Bacon before he realized the translation. And I just thought it was the funniest thing ever. So I wrote him a poem called Bacon. I ate tonight the best hot dog I've ever bitten into, wrapped in bacon, served in a toasted roll with a caramelized onion and sweet chili thick as an iron gutter pipe. I hated every bite, bitter in the knowledge it was costing me $9 plus tax. The fact that it had been slid in my direction across a table by a tattooed arm attached to a man in a baseball hat who shook his fist and told me that my choice was awesome. I like to taste effort in what I consider awesome, to suffer penance through hunger and wait. And I blasted back to the langosh I ate after 3 hours straight as a passenger in the back seat of a car with no seatbelts, shuddering through Mishkolch in the direction of Salona. You told me it translated as bacon, and I smirked at the irony, but bit my tongue and helped you unpack. While you took the gypsy proofing off the house, chopped the wood, aired the flumes, lit the fires, crushed the garlic, vacuumed the larvae from the windows, fixed the beds, fried the langosh, and opened the palinka. We ate that night the best bread I have ever bitten into, but not before bowing our heads in awe to the Spirit's holy gospel. It's a poem about bacon and palinka. So it's actually a beautiful combination. In fact, the last time, I don't know if anybody in the room has ever drank palinka. It's like poutine, except Hungarian. And in fact, somebody said, yes, good man. The last time I actually drank palinka was actually in Cork City. There was a poet featuring at Ovale called Denisa Pishku, a lovely lady from Romania. And she had bought me a bottle of palinka. And so there was another guy in Cork City at the time, good friend of mine, Paul Selecki, good musician. We left Ovale after Christ knows how long, how many pints of Beamish, ended up in the Crane Lane, and then walked back to the lock and drank a bottle of palinka. I woke up without pants, and I don't know what happened to Paul Selecki's shoes. and it wasn't even our house that we'd slept in that night. It was brilliant. It was a great night. You should have been there. Maybe you were. If you were, don't tell anybody. Anyway, I feel like I'm talking to myself now. Moving on. So I did have a new book coming out this year, but pesky germs. So the book has actually been pushed back another year by Salmon. No big deal. I'd like to be able to be there in person anyway to travel around the various reading venues and meet you all in person. But technology has been a godsend in the meantime. So I have a few poems from the new collection. It's called Little Empires. I'm a father nowadays, and like growing up now watching kids is just it's an amazing experience. But it's not just that I'm not just writing about kids. Don't worry, I'm not going to read you baby poems now for the next 10 minutes. But it's kind of like kickstarted my memory of myself as a kid. So I'm writing a lot from memory at the moment, which is brilliant, because usually my stimulus, my inspiration has always been sitting in pubs or going to open mics and meeting people. And that's kind of been taken away from me the last 18, 20 months, like it has everybody. So it's been quite interesting to write from memory. So I'll start from the second collection. This is a shortish poem called We Didn't Read the News. This is about me muttering poems away to myself, as the bio said. We didn't read the news. I was at my usual booth, half a cold cappuccino in front of me, my daughter crawling over my lap in an attempt to crayon the paper I was reading. The man at the table across the floor looked like the prison warden from the Shawshank Redemption. What's his face? I'd seen him in a few things recently. He smiled, stared just long enough for it not to be awkward. Probably had a flashback of his little one doing the same thing some 40 years or so before. His wife lowered her newspaper too and looked over at my daughter, watery-eyed, as if picturing herself at the same age, not a care in the world, and more concerned with colouring things in than reading those little black shapes that make everyone angry. Bob Gunton, that was him. The true miscreant of the tale, that character you sit and watch and pray they get their comeuppance. I looked down at my table and hoped I hadn't stared back long enough for it to have been awkward. I took my daughter's tiny hand and guided her crayon straight across the front page of my newspaper, carved a waxy orange line through the column about war, added green to the political article, purple to the images of the Wall Street men transfixed by their sanctity of screens. We took turns shading a bit here, another bit there, exchanging crayons until the prismatic pages began to glow like a city at night, a metropolis viewed from a distant hill, where the engorgement of colors is just enough to help us briefly forget about those smaller, anger-inducing shapes from within. Thanks. Everyone still hear me okay? Is it just thumbs up? Yeah, cool. That's great. I don't want to be too loud because my kids are actually asleep in the next room and there's a monitor right behind me. So if my camera suddenly goes black and it should be okay though. So I've been writing a lot from memory and not being able to get back to my home. I come from a small village, Union Hall in West Cork. And I've lost the accent over the years, you might tell, but it comes back after a couple of pints of Murphy's or something. But a good friend of mine, she lives in Lepp, she sent me a photograph. She's had kids as well, and she sent me a photograph of her kids on a boreen. And it just like, oh, this beautiful photograph of two children running down a boreen, nothing more innocent than that. And it took me back. So I wrote a poem, another original title. It's called From a Photograph of a Boreen in West Cork. Just from your photograph, I could smell the bowing foxgloves. Remember being so young that I had vowed to outgrow them. I could feel the ferns, the bucklers, and the hart's tongues catching my shins as I waded chest deep through the fields, hopeful of finding a shorter than shortcut home. My empire was vast, a tangle of boreens from the lake out to the lodge, up past Donoghue's, and over the brow of the hill where the western road ramped into the sky. Just from your photograph, I could hear the cars rounding Spitzie's corner, headlights briefly revealing the faces of dead musicians thumbtacked to my bedroom wall. I could feel Connolly's of Lepp next door shaking from a band our parents prayed we'd never sneak into. There were people too, some long gone, others probably still cemented to the same corner of the bar, reliving with undiminished animation the afternoon small John questioned whether the two lip-locked ladies were Lebanese. My bruises were faded, Leary digging me in the arm every time a yellow reg passed, leaving us to hitchhike some more, in wind, in rain, in jackets growing smaller by the forecast. Just from your photograph, I relived the music, the late nights, the freedom of parental trust 16 years in the making, how we clung to the arse of a warm pint for fear the next weekend would never come. I could recall the steps from Kathleen's Corner to Fuller's Wood, hear the sound of herons at night in the trees across the harbour, how we broke into a sprint if headlines appeared on the far side of the bridge, lest we miss a spin to the only late bar for miles. My memories are kind, the bad ones dead and buried, dealt with, accepted, the good ones coming back for an encore every time they're summoned. Just from your photograph, I briefly remembered what it meant to be young, to be one day measuring myself against a foxglove and feeling indestructible, to be kicking a ball until it was too dark to see, to be growing up oblivious to the world, chest deep in its state of alarm, somewhere at the end of that boreen. Hopefully the Americans joining us know what a boreen is. It's a really small road with grass growing in the middle of it. Pam knows exactly what it is. It's one of those roads, if you're not used to it, you're inevitably going to meet a tractor coming the other way. It's a game of chicken between a Ford Fiesta and a tractor. I'm going to stay in West Cork, if you don't mind. Of course you don't, because you're there. Well, you're not in West Cork. You're in the PRC. I had a reading in Vienna about, Jesus, when was it? Fucking hell, time flies. About 4 years ago, I was doing a reading in Vienna, and I've a poem in my book about a quarry that I used to work in Castlehaven, just outside of Skibbereen. And the poem in the book requires a little bit of like accent work, because I use the voices of some of the characters I worked with. And I thought, sure, grand, I'm in Vienna. Who the feck would know, you know? Because I don't really go to too many lengths to hide the identities of said characters. So I belted into this poem anyway in a bar in Vienna. And one of the ladies in the audience just happened to be the professor of English at UCC, who lives next door to one of the men in question in the poem. My heart stopped. So I've stopped reading that poem in public, actually. But not to digress, in my second book, I have the follow-up to that poem. And that's what this is. And there's no accents involved, so it shouldn't offend anybody, except Donal Regan. So if Donal Regan is watching tonight on Facebook, I apologize in advance. This is another very, I'm not very good with titles. This is called The Day I Nearly Killed Donal Regan with a Bucket of a JCB. True story. The day I nearly killed Donal Regan with the bucket of a JCB had actually started well. A 7 a.m. cycle through Myres Wood, out past Renine at full tide, trees electric with waking birds, tractors dieseling along the lanes to a creamery on its last legs. Verdant hedgerows thick with that baited combination of nettles and blackberries, honeysuckle and briars, a spangle of spider webs glistening in the dew, stitching them all together. Sounds like a John Spillane song already, doesn't it? That the measure of a real man was the ability to run a loaded wheelbarrow up a plank of wood into the back of a trailer is a memory not easily forgotten. I could say the same for Donal Regan's eyes. When the teeth of the bucket of the JCB I was driving came through the window of the cab of the digger he was sitting in. That was all 18 years of me trying to prove I had more to offer the world than a wheelbarrow and a plank. I don't remember much else about that job apart from my daily cycle and that one particular incident that went unpunished. But if I quarry deep enough, I can still find a younger version of myself in a broken pair of boots, ripped jeans, cut hands, shaking on a bed of slate, doing his best to drown out the sounds of engines growling, glass cracking, steel scraping off of steel, but listening instead to the call of a corncrake in the adjacent field announcing his departure. So now, thank you. I can see visual clicks and claps. It's great. It's great that I can't hear it because my kids will probably wake up. But anyway, it's nice like that. Thanks, Africa. The worst part now about reading is I can't look at the chat because I can see there's 30 messages in the chat window. I love listening to the 5-word challenge and then reading the messages. It was wonderful. I want to know what you're gossiping about now. So anyway, speaking about ripped jeans, I've only a couple of poems, don't worry, I'm not gonna overgo the time. I lived in Cork a little bit, but I used to take day trips from West Cork up to Cork City just to go secondhand clothes shopping. I don't know why, but there was back in the early 90s, there was a rake of these cool secondhand clothes shops, especially down Carey's Lane. But this poem is something about that. It's called Goodwill Jeans. Goodwill is it's a you know Pam knows what Goodwill is. It's a secondhand store in America. It's where you donate stuff, and it's where people, it's where English teachers like me go and buy clothes for cheap. This is called Goodwill Jeans. The summer I turned 15, I took a day trip to Cork on my own, armed with a few pounds I'd saved from my dishwashing job. I made a beeline for Carey's Lane, where I stopped to worship the buskers. Then drifted amongst the vintage shops, not knowing how or why I had developed a preference for secondhand clothes. Maybe the wind chimes, the smell of patchouli, sandalwood, or the grateful dead making shapes in my malleable head. Fast forward 20 years. In the fitting room in Goodwill, I slip into another man's life, hoist his journey over my thighs, button him around my waist. He walks me onto the shop floor, does a twirl in front of the mirror, assures me that for 20 bucks, I can ride shotgun for a year, see the city the way he used to, exchange stories one ghost to another. I take him up on his offer, glide an allied resurrection out the door, into a city where a million people look straight through me. Thanks. Thanks very much. All right, I'm gonna do two more poems. This penultimate, second last poem. It's kind of based around the same time. I had a flashback during the summer. I don't know what it was like in Cork, but in Vienna it was, you know, 38 degrees Celsius, and we had to wear these things called FFP2 masks, which just made your whole face sweat as you're walking around. It's like wearing a sauna on your head. But Vienna is one of these strange cities, like during the summer, one of these few capital cities that actually empties because everybody usually goes away to the mountains for cooler weather or down to the coast. And so I wrote a poem about that. It's a little bit topical, a little bit dark, but heck it, we'll go for it. The poem is called Michael Stipe Dancing. This afternoon is up to nothing. A few locals flitting across the streets like an agitation of dragonflies on stagnant water. Slumber punctuated by the rumble of a tram's almost empty carriage. Arseless benches, faceless cafe windows. We've quarantined ourselves again, angling for agreement that you can't be expected to wear a mask in this heat. Even the birds have fucked off somewhere else. Tenantless trees drooping over bus stops, dragooning a drunk into deputizing with a song. He obliges. Eyes closed, he begins choreographing a permanent tan into all sorts of shapes. Suddenly, in a slowed down scene, reminiscent of how a movie depicts the stillness of the moment before a bomb, I allow a flashback to play out, remembering a man crush I had on Michael Stipe dancing, spinning, contorting, twisting. A few locals stopped to stare, pretzeled faces like wet cloths wrung. Perhaps different memories triggered, relived, missed in these precious seconds. We alchemize these moments, each to their own, mindful of how peace is as shatterable as stagnant water. How just one letter can make laughter slaughter, make an ape the apex, transform something we forge into something we forget, and how, in a flash, it's gone. In each other's eyes, a scatter of birds. Okay, I'm going to leave you with just one short piece of nonsense, if you don't mind, just to kind of lighten the mood a bit. I just moved into a new apartment here in Vienna, but I moved in about 2 months ago. And sometimes you still get post from post belonging to the previous tenant. And that can be fascinating sometimes, you know, especially when you open it and have a good read, which I do. Sure, why not? And so I just call this poem Wish You Were Here. And again, thanks in advance for listening. And I'm looking forward to the open mic after this. Wish You Were Here. I've so far received two postcards addressed to the previous tenant. One from Martin, sent from a highfalutin ski resort in the Swiss Alps. The other from some out-of-the-way Italian fishing village that nobody's ever heard of, except for Sandra, who wishes I was there. You can tell by either the detail or the sparsity of words how valuable a friend I am to each. Sandra, with fabulous reviews of views, tastes, and smells in meticulous microfont. Martin, with his barely legible scrawl assuring me he's alive and well and surviving the snow. If I had to choose, I picture a small car ferry gliding into the port, sailboat masts clinking in the breeze, yours truly ready to vault from the bow to the pier, Sandra waiting by the cabrio. And Martin, sure, he can go and fuck himself, I say, slamming shut the trunk, eyes north, inviting an avalanche. All right. Thanks very much. I really enjoyed this. I wasn't sure how it was going to work, but thank you.